Are we ready?
It's happening. Are you ready to about to do this with me?
Yes, I want to do this with you.
And I want to do this with you.
Here we go. Here we're going to do it.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Brooke.
And this is Teach Us a Crime
Podcast.
Chicka chicka ear. I'm a singer, guys. I just want to let you know. So I'm so sorry. Maybe you can fast forward that part of your episode, but it's going to be a different little jingle every time.
So how did we get here? Well, that's great. I'm glad you asked, which I do to my students all the time. They're like, but I didn't ask. I'm like, but you did.
I know you saw me looking here confused, like, but I didn't say anything. I did not speak any words.
1 year ago, I up and flew to Delaware to meet a stranger, which I do not recommend, but I did not murder Ashley, and I met her on TikTok. Thank you, TikTok. Shout out to TikTok. Free advertisement.
Hashtag TikTok. Hashtag I'm not dead. Hashtag we're still here. Hashtag making a podcast.
We are making a podcast.
Making
I don't even
spirits
know.
Right.
Like, yes. So that's a little background of how we got here. And we're like super excited. Like I'm actually kind of nervous. I've been texting Ashley all week. I'm like, I'm nervous. She's like, no, it's just a conversation, dude. It's just a conversation.
And now that the conversation is happening, I'm not as nervous, but child, I'm nervous.
I know. But like, and it's crazy because like as teachers, you talk in front of kids all day long and you say the most ridiculous thing. But then you get in front of adults and you're like, do I know words? What are words? I have no words. I don't know how to speak the English language.
Exactly. And I teach the English language. So there's no excuse for me. There's none.
I do not. So I have an excuse and they've been coming for me on TikTok about that. They're like, girl, you don't even know where a comma goes. I'm like, I never said I taught English. I teach math. I teach numbers.
And
numbers
first of all, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Mind your business. And second of all, mind your business.
Exactly.
Period.
So we do have social media and we want you to follow us and we want you to be a part of this journey with us. And we're kind of cool. We think we're cool. 13-year-olds and 5-year-olds. I don't know. What grade do you teach?
5-year-olds, Brooke. That's the age of my own children, not the children I teach.
I teach 13-year-olds.
I teach, what is it? Third graders? What are they, like 9? Seven. I think they're like 9.
They're 7.
Nah, they're like 9.
Your father is 7. I think they're 7.
Okay, maybe they're 7. I should probably know these things, but I'm busy teaching the children of America, so age doesn't matter. I'm just trying to drop this knowledge.
Exactly. So we teach a range of children, and we get constant feedback from people all the time, so we can take it. So we really want y'all to follow us on Instagram at Teachers Talk Crime Podcast, and on TikTok, which we're going to use our personals for now because we have a good amount of followers between the both of us. And I think we should ride on that. Well, I mean, we should ride on that. So like mine is Southern Math Teacher.
And mine is Branny. So Brant with 3 Y's _.
I screwed that email so bad. And Gmail was like, we don't know that sender. Send it back.
It was like, boop.
Mm-hmm.
Try again.
It was only Branny. I didn't do Branny.
Yeah, I always say it like that. I don't know where the Y's came from, but they're there. They're there now.
And we also want you to email us at teacherstalkcrimepodcast@gmail.com. We want you to email us all the teacher things, all the teacher.
Everything.
Did you have a good experience with a teacher? Did you have a bad experience with a teacher? Did a teacher save your life? Funny things that have happened in your classroom. If you are a teacher, bad things that have happened in your classroom. If you are a teacher, just all the teacher things, anything,
everything,
hashtag teacher.
Send it to us because we want to hear it all.
Yeah.
Because we're going to read it.
We are. Because we don't have lives. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, we're literally sitting here in our bedroom closets. So.
But we'll be together soon. We'll be together soon. I'm super excited.
Soon we will be reunited.
Exactly. All right.
See, I told you guys I sing a lot. Yeah. I told you.
Yes. But it's great singing, so it's okay.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're fine, Wapo. So, Ashley, did you have your loaded tea today?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I did. Today, what did I drink today?
Say, what
Today
flavor?
I had Miss Resolution, I believe is what I drank today from Silver Linings Lessons.
Well, I paid $7 for mine because I'm not making my own cheese yet. And
Ma'am, get on the wave.
I know, I know. But we do Loaded Tea Fridays. And so I had a cucumber watermelon and it was delicious, except for I got a little bit more anxiety because it has a lot of caffeine and I was already in it and then I drink it. But, anyways, that's
It happens to the
it
best of
does.
us.
It does. And caffeine does that too.
I purposely had a loaded tea with a lot of caffeine today because I knew I needed it for this very moment that's happening right now.
I'm so okay.
We are doing this.
We're just like gonna get into it. We're just gonna go
We're
for
just gonna do it.
it. Okay.
Let's do it.
All right. So sit down, shut up. The murder is about to begin.
Yes, let's go.
Okay, the lesson that I have for you today is about Nicole Caskiness. And I'm butchering that name, y'all. Like, I know I'm butchering that name.
Did you say Casca
So,
what?
Kaskinskas. My best teaching abilities is Caskiness. But I'm just gonna call her Nicole because,
And I'm just gonna call her Casca.
yes, because I can't say names at all. I screw my students' names up all the time, and
Same.
if they're listening, they know what story I'm about to tell because I have two boys in my class, like right now, and we're gonna call them Jimmy and Johnny. And Jimmy looks like a Johnny, and Johnny looks like he'd be named a Jimmy. I screw it up all the time, and they are so frustrated with me at this point because they've been with me since August, and they're like, "Seriously?" I'm like, "I'm sorry,
You
but
know,
you look like
I
a
feel
Johnny."
you on that.
Yeah.
I feel you on that because my kids look completely different with their mask off than they do on. So I'll be talking to them all day and they'll come up to me at recess with their mask off. And I'm just like, who are you again?
Yeah, which one are you?
Are you new here? Yeah. That's how I feel every
Exactly.
time.
Exactly. So,
So Nicole, Cascos.
Cascos, yes, exactly. We're going to take it all the way back to the MySpace days, the start of social media.
Not a top eight.
Yes, I was literally telling my students about this case because I can talk to 13-year-olds about murder. Don't come for me, parents, but I do. And I was like, yeah, back in the MySpace days when like Rachel, my BFF for life, she would know when I was mad at her because she would not be my number one friend. So.
It was like the most form of disrespect when you weren't in the top eight.
Oh, yeah. And you knew it.
Like friendships were broken.
Exactly. They were all the time, all the time. Back in the MySpace days, the start of social media, the start of meeting strangers online, which is a big part of this, and becoming friends with
Which
said
is what we
strangers.
did.
I know it was, and we didn't know. And this was like the start of like being whoever you wanted to be on the internet, which now we know more about social media, and we know that like not everything somebody puts online is true, but it is,
Absolutely.
yeah, and it is the face that you see. So you take it for a grain of salt these days. Now back then, like we didn't know that. And it was most of our escapes of reality. It was for me, and I know that. So somehow on the interwebs, these two teenagers, Nicole and Billy, Billy's formal name is William, but we're just going to call him Billy because that is short for
Billy.
Two teens. They both met online. They began chatting. They both came from broken homes, but lived over 100 miles from each other and somehow still managed to fall in love. Nicole was 14 when she first met Billy. She was,
How old was Billy?
I'm going to get to that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Exactly.
I was like,
14 years old, which is the age I teach. So this is like why I really related to this. And Nicole was so beautiful to a lot of people that we talked to and cited, but she was quiet and she was shy. And according to my findings, this is why she didn't have a ton of close friends. She loved music so much so that her neighbors reported that she would spend hours alone at home listening to music. I am certain.
Very loud.
Well, I think like they didn't come from like a very wealthy family. They were very middle
Okay.
class. So I feel like they were in one of those. And I don't know this for a fact, but what I would assume, and I assume this because of like the articles I was reading and how like in close proximity the houses were, I assume they were in one of those like cookie cutter neighborhoods is what I would assume.
Okay. Every house is the same. Going to every house has the same layout.
And it's very middle class. Like, I can hear my neighbors walk around. I know that's crazy, but like, I can hear my neighbors walk around. So like, if she was having a party, I would hear my neighbor having a party.
Same Z's. I got neighbors up and I got neighbors down. And I'm right in the middle, so it's like an Oreo cookie. So I hear everything.
Yes. And this is back when like LimeWire was really big. And you know, you always had to test out what song you were getting from LimeWire, because you might have gotten a version of Candy Shop, you know?
Or anyway. You have the song and you think you got it, and it's like, downloaded from. And you're like, man.
I know. Always. So, I mean, he said that she was very much into her music. But, like, what he was saying was that she was always alone. Like, I know for, like, me growing up, I didn't have friends. Like, I had friends coming in and out of my house at all times. Like, I was constantly leaving and going with friends or coming. But what he noticed was that she was often at home listening to music. Mm. Billy, on the other hand, was reported to be respectful, but trouble. Mm. We always loved the bad boys. And he was 17 at the time of them meeting.
There is no way.
Uh-huh.
Where were her parents monitoring her online usage?
Right. But then again, it was new. So think back. Were your parents really monitoring? Because it was so new, they didn't really know. And you
know, I don't know. I don't remember. I can't recall.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, we had the computer in our family room, and like, my mom could walk by if she wanted to see it, but like, she wasn't like standing over my shoulder.
Yeah, and I was also chatting with men all the time. ASL. Like, ugh.
Yeah. And we had those codes, mom over the shoulder, you know.
Oh my gosh, I've never heard that one.
Really? Oh, we use that code all the
time. MOS?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
And it'd be like, don't say anything because mom's over my shoulder. It was crazy.
Mm-mm. Y'all scandalous.
I know. Anyways, Billy was working at McDonald's, so he was like a hard worker. He was very respectful to adults and authority, according to sources, but he kind of just had those like 17-year-old boy tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
He loved his muscle car, so he was driving, but he was your average teen. So upon meeting online, the two quickly fell in love, and people say that the couple were saying, I love you, in a matter of days.
That's disgusting. That's absolutely disgusting.
It is, but keep in mind, we're talking about teenagers, and like, yeah. I hear it all the time. I hear it all the time in the hallway, and this is not new. And they decided at 14
to get married.
17 years old, no, but they decided it'd be a great idea to live together in Connecticut, where Billy was from.
Run them back. They're gonna live together.
That was their idea. This is like their great idea to have.
Nicole, Nicole, whatever her name is, Nicole.
Well, yeah, Nicole.
How did you think you was going to move to...
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like, your parents were just going to be like, yes, go stay with Billy. Go ahead.
Yeah. So that's exactly what I'm getting at. Like, she was in New Hampshire and he's in Connecticut. It's over 100 miles away. And like, they were just going to live together. Like, there's a lot of paperwork with going through the process of like withdrawing a student from school. And like,
especially if you're like not legal, you're 14.
Right. Right. And I know I can only speak for the state of Alabama because that's like where I'm from. But like, the state of Alabama, you can't drop out until you're 16. So like, her mother would have had to withdraw her and re-enroll her in another school because you have to have proof of all that. Like, legally, you have proof of all that. So anyways, that I want to also note that Nicole's mother was actually the one who drove Nicole to meet Billy for the first time in August of 2002.
Does this woman have a name?
So she does. But I want to say, like, my mom. So, okay. My point being is that if your mother took you to meet a 17-year-old boy, she is obviously supporting you and she obviously trusts you. And she obviously is thinking, okay, my daughter is responsible enough to handle this, because I know that I had a boyfriend when I was in like 14 and he broke my heart. He was allowed to come to our house, but I was not allowed to go to his house.
Did you have slumber
parties? No. Oh. He was allowed to come to my house during the daytime on weekends, and like, we would jump on the trampoline. Come on. Like, this is what they're doing.
Ooh, like, let's go on a date on the tramp.
We would jump on the trampoline. We would ride the golf cart, but I was not allowed to go to his house. Like, that was just my family's rule. So like,
okay.
At 14 years old, she's thinking, oh, my mom is cool. Like, she's taking me to meet this older boy.
See, but I can understand your aspect, because he was allowed to come to your house. So it was like, your parents could always monitor you. You know what I'm saying? So I get why she was like, look, he could come here. You can't go there. But like doing the other way around, that's kind of sus. Like,
but I guess like what, I'm not a mother, but like, I guess her mom was like, at least I'm going to be there. At least I'm the one taking her to see him. Like yeah. I'm there.
And maybe she thought like, oh, maybe if I didn't do this, like she would end up rebelling and like running away. So maybe she was just trying to be proactive like that.
And that's what I think too. So clearly her mom was supporting this and her mom was like, okay, my daughter doesn't have a lot of girlfriends. So she's definitely just like trying to find herself and she's found a boyfriend, which is great. She's talking to me. She wants me to take her. So I'm thinking like the mom was like, okay, we're going to build this relationship. So it was then when they approached her mother.
Billy and Nicole.
Billy and Nicole approached Nicole's mother with the idea of them living together. And of course,
she was her mother said, hell no.
Yeah, she was like, no, this is absolutely absurd. So they threatened Nicole's mother with emancipation, which again, Nicole's mother said no to, and she stood her ground. And as she should, this girl is 14 years old. But.
And at this point, you were probably dating for like 3 days.
Exactly. But when the nose kept flying in the direction of the couple, the two decided that it was then and there they would plot to kill Nicole's mother.
Skylar and Aria would never. Skylar and Aria would never.
And that's what I'm thinking. Like, here's the thing. Nicole is 14. You have 4 years. If you are truly in love like you think that you are at 14 years old, why can you not wait until she's 18? What is so demanding that you have to live with her or him right now at 14 years old?
And also, like, why did you automatically go to murder? You could have ran away.
You could have been rebellious.
You could have done anything, but you were like, you know what? She getting on my nerves because we trying to be together. So let's kill her. Like, what?
Gotta go.
Yeah. Like, literally.
And they, but like in their teenage brains, which I tell my students all the time, I was like, your brain is not even developed until you're 25. And they're like, no, it's 21. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I wasn't making great decisions at 21. I'm pretty sure it's 25. But in their teenage brains, like they thought, okay, the only way to get rid of this problem is that we just kill your mother and then we can just be together happily ever after. Like, we can
and
just
not get caught for murdering your mother. Kick it cool.
Exactly.
All right.
So, the mother. Let's bring up the mother. Janine. I know. Janine. And she has a different last name than Nicole. So, I want to say here, like, she does have a different last name because Nicole was 11 when her parents got divorced.
Okay.
Nicole did go through that whole divorce thing of parents, which happens so often.
It happened to me. She was, I mean, not me, but to my children.
Oh, well, it happened to me twice with the same person.
Dang.
I'll explain. I know. So they do have different last names, but Janine kept Nicole and her brother. She had full custody of Nicole and her younger brother.
Okay.
And she was 43 at the time of her death. And friends and family remember her as being warm and generous. She was a devoted mother to Nicole and her brother. And she also worked in a school system. I don't really have her title in front of me, but the report said like she was around kids. She worked in the school system, which we know as like teachers, there are many jobs in a school. Yeah. So I think she was, I can't even remember, like not a paralegal. That's a lawyer person, but a
paraprofessional.
Paraprofessional. That's what it was. That's the word. That's the word I'm looking. She was a paraprofessional. And a lot of people said that they do not recall Janine ever getting angry, ever raising her voice at students, ever being mad, or ever being in a bad mood, which commend this woman.
Because she's talented, and I would love for Janine to teach me her ways, but she can't.
Like,
R.I.P. Janine.
Because like, I wake up in a bad mood, and I go in, and the first thing out of my mouth sometimes, like, some days I'm just like, guys, not today. I can't do it.
I mean, that's how I've been like for the past 3 days because I'm like, guys, I have to record this podcast and I need to not sound like a man. So I'm going to need y'all to be on chill today. Okay.
Exactly. But Nicole had a half sister, which again has a different last name. So I'm assuming it was from Nicole's dad, but was around Nicole and like knew Nicole's mother because they have that interaction. And the half sister reported that Janine could be strict in the household, which again, if she works in a school system, I work like I'm a product of a teacher child. Like I was a teacher child and my mom was strict. My best friend was a product of a teacher child and her mom was strict. And I'm sure like because you see things every day, like you're strict on your kids to an extent of like not like abusive strict, but like you have rules and morals.
But I also feel like it's a part of parenting too. Like if you want to have order, no one's telling you to like be crazy strict, but you got to have some type of rules and basis down so they know what to follow and what to do and what not to do, etc.
Right. So Nicole's half-sister reported that Janine could be strict and recalled Nicole confiding in her and mentioning that she had not been getting along with her mother. But again, Nicole's half-sister kind of brushed it off because she was like, well, what teenager gets along with their mother? Like, it's kind of that awkward year where you don't think your mom knows what she's talking about, you know? So again, it goes back to like she kind of brushed that off. So the couple plotted. And Ashley, I mean, they plotted because they attempted to kill this woman 4 times before succeeding.
That is really crazy. That is really nuts to me.
They were clearly committed to this.
Like,
so committed.
You tried to kill her 4 times. Like, you weren't like after time number one, you were like, all right, this is done.
So, like, I'm going to get into like the trial and like what she was sentenced to, but I think the reason that she got her sentence was because, like, you admitted trying to kill your mother 4 times. After the first time, you didn't stop and, like, reflect and be like, this is not a great idea. I probably shouldn't do this.
Exactly. Yeah. You were like, we got to up the ante. We got to make sure we do it.
And so I'm glad you said that. So here's how they did it. They tried to poison her coffee creamer by putting Dime Tap. I'm not probably.
Is it
Dime
Tap? No. Dime
Tap. Yeah.
Is that? Yes.
I think that's how you pronounce it. I could be totally wrong. Dime Tap, Benadryl, and other drugs into
What's
her coffee.
What's Dime Tap?
I don't really know. I don't think we're saying it right, but it's something. It's DIMETAPP. I don't do drugs, so I don't know. I don't even know. This could be like an over the counter drug. I mean, I don't know. Benadryl is over the counter.
Yeah. It has to be if they're buying it, they're freaking children.
Yeah. And Benadryl and other drugs into her coffee creamer and she drank it, but she didn't die. So they then upped the ante and they upped the ante and put bleach in her coffee creamer, according to affidavits. But that didn't work either.
Dang. And also Dimetap is an over-the-counter colon allergy medicine. So it's like a Benadryl.
Oh, so they put Benadryl and another Benadryl.
Yeah, double Benadryl.
So, I mean, you probably just got like a really good nap.
Yeah.
But it didn't work. And so then they added bleach, which I couldn't find anything about if she actually drank the one that had bleach in it. But I feel like you would have been able to taste that. I don't know. But
yeah,
that didn't
work. Such a strong smell.
Exactly. So then they tried burning her in her bed. Which didn't work either because the bed was fire resistant material and they were going to blame it on a candle.
So did they not even like, did she ever find out that they try to light her on? Did she ever find out that they try to light her on fire?
Well, then the third attempt was they were going to attempt to blow her house up with her in it. And they were going to do this by blowing up the fuel oil tank in her house. And it is reported that they're not sure if Janine knew of all these attempts or even if she grew suspicious, but they did know that tension in the house was mounting. So it's not like Janine ever said anything to anyone that like, oh, I think my daughter's trying to kill me or I think her boyfriend's trying to kill me. It's not reported. I mean, I searched and searched, but I couldn't find where like she knew these things were happening or not.
So at this time, did Janine know that they were still seeing each other or did she just assume that she cut contact with her?
Oh, no, no. This boy. Okay. So on August 6, 2003, so a year after the mother has taken the daughter to meet this boy, so they've been dating a year, I think 15 months to be exact is what my research found. Mm-hmm. So they've been dating 15 months, which for teenagers, I granted this is a long time.
That's a long time.
Right. I agree. And my teenagers are in love after like 1 week. So yeah. They've been dating a year and they finally succeeded in taking her life. So on that day, Billy went to Nicole's home and started up a random conversation with Janine in her kitchen area.
Okay.
And I need to note that Billy had been staying at their house for the week, the whole week leading up to the killing.
Okay. So they here's my question. Here's my concern. You're telling me Janine took her to meet Billy. They were like, we want to be together. Let us move in. And she was like, nope. And then you let this boy stay at your house?
Right. So here's my, yes. And that's where I was thinking. I said, so y'all's whole reason for killing this woman or planning to kill this woman is because she won't let you live together. But you're basically already living together.
Essentially.
What more do you want?
Like, did you just want, actual freedom? Like, what did... Go ahead.
Yeah. And I'm not downing anybody that works at McDonald's, but keep in mind, this was in 2003. Like, they were not making a lot of money at McDonald's. This was before the upcharge and minimum wage and all of that. And this boy's 17. So, like, how are you about to provide for a 14-year-old? Like, you have it made by living in this woman's house with her daughter that she's allowing you to live here, and yet you still want to kill her.
I mean, I worked at McDonald's and I thought I was balling.
I guess to a 17-year-old, it is a lot of money. But
I don't think they really know what goes into groceries, bills, common necessities that you would need to survive.
I'm sure. Yeah. So they came up with a new plan. I mean, after four attempts, they have come up with a new plan. Mm-hmm. The couple had planned to kill the mother and make it look like a break-in had gone wrong. The classic setup. I mean, this is I listen to a ton of true crime, and I feel like it's always the staged break-in, but then they're dumb enough and they never actually take anything.
Like, learn from, they probably didn't watch Law & Order. They're not about that life.
However, the couple did practice and had bogus alibis for, where they were going to say they were at the time. So, Billy walks into the house and starts up this random conversation with Janine. I mean, I'm picturing, he's trying not to act suspicious. So he's like, how's the weather today, Janine? What are you watching on TV? What's on cable tonight? Blah, blah, blah.
And Billy, don't be suspicious. Yes. Don't be suspicious.
Right. Billy then reportedly hit her in the head with a baseball bat.
Okay. Where'd the bat come from?
So he's carrying a bat, I'm sure. Or either he hid one in a corner and she's got her back turned. I'm not really sure about where she's standing. Mm-mm. But again, where did the bat come from? So his original plan, according to his interviews with police, was that he was just going to club her to death with this baseball bat. So he hits her with a baseball bat. It knocks her out. And then he, I guess on a whim, decides to break from the plan and proceeds to stab her with a knife more than 40 times. But that doesn't even begin to touch the surface. Yes. This dude didn't only stab her. The blade broke during the stabbing. And instead of stopping, she's already dead. She is already dead. He stabbed her with the first knife. He goes and gets another knife. Comes back and stabs her some more. That blade breaks and he goes and gets a third knife.
Nah, this boy had murder in his life. Okay. He has been wanting to murder somebody. If you are killing, you're stabbing her that many times to go through three knives, sir. Three. And also, where's Nicole? What is she doing? Okay.
So all of this was happening while Nicole, 16 at the time, so they met at 14, I guess she was about to turn 15 when they met, so now 15 months have passed and she's out. Nicole was waiting at the 7-Eleven where her mother had a part-time job. Now keep in mind, her mom worked for the school system, but as teachers, we often have part-time jobs, aka we're making
money. Because we are poor.
Yeah. So this is the 7-Eleven that her mother had a part-time job at, and she is waiting in Billy's car at this 7-Eleven, reading a freaking, and I don't want to say freaking, but it is not the happy hour episodes. I'm saying freaking magazine. And think about in 2003, what magazines were out. And that's 17 magazine. She's reading a teen magazine.
She was probably taking one of those stupid quizzes.
Yes.
Does your favorite color say about you?
No, she's probably taking the quiz are me and Billy meant to be together?
Oh my God, we have this many letters the same. We're lovers forever.
Exactly. She's waiting at the 7-Eleven reading a magazine. So when Billy gives her the signal, the cue, I don't know how they did it because I guess in 2003, maybe cell phones weren't around. I don't really remember. I mean, I didn't have a cell phone in 2003, so I can't say that they were.
I don't think but they did either.
Yeah. So Billy gives her some kind of cue to let her know that she can come back home and help Billy clean up the scene.
I wonder why she was at the 7-Eleven. Was that for her alibi in case people saw her or?
Right. Well, Billy said in his that she was the lookout because it was close to her house.
Oh.
So, and her mom had a fiance at the time. So I guess like she was on the lookout for police, or if she was on the lookout for her mom's fiance's car, something like that.
Mm.
Is my guess. Like, I mean, Billy does say she was meant as a lookout. So yeah. So Billy calls her and is like, hey, come back home. The deed is done. She goes in the house, and this girl.
Oh my God, does she stab her too?
No, she doesn't. But Billy looks at her and he's like, I have your mother's blood on my clothes. She steps over her mother's dead body on the floor, goes and gets him a washcloth to wipe off the blood. Like, no emotion, nothing. Like, just hands this guy a rag. It's like, here you go, clean yourself up.
No.
So they dispose, like, they start cleaning up all the evidence. Obviously, all three of the knives, which if I was Nicole, I'd be like, dude, it took you three knives. Like, what the heck just happened here?
I mean, obviously, she don't care. She stepped over her mother.
You're right. So they clean up all of this, and they get in Billy's car, and they go, and they dispose of the evidence in various areas around town. So they have watched some Law and Order because they didn't just leave it, and they didn't just put it all in one area. They disposed of it in various. Then this couple decided, we need new clothes. They went to the mall.
Not with the mall clothes.
The mall. So Billy sends Nicole in with cash first. She goes and like buys Billy a shirt or whatever he needs, because I don't know how much blood got where. Mm-hmm. She goes and buys him new clothes, and then they just like hang out in the mall. I guess like because cameras, and I guess that's their alibi. Because remember, they had practiced their alibis.
Yes.
So while the two murderous lovebirds were out shopping, the body was being discovered by the fiance. Yes.
Damn.
He immediately called 911 and told them what he had found. The police arrived and started their investigation. They were obviously very puzzled because this woman was known to be like pleasant, and she was a very likable mom. She worked in the school system, and she had a very basic average life, like nothing. No money, no like a lot of valuables. She was just your ordinary mom.
Yeah.
And she was found dead, you know, by two love-struck teenagers, which they didn't know at the time. One neighbor even said that her first thought when she like heard the news, because I was reading the article and the neighbor was like pulling in, and when she pulled in, she saw all these cop cars and she was like, oh my gosh, what happened? And then she found out that Janine had died. And her first thought when she heard this news was how devastated Nicole and Charlie's the brother, would be. Mm. But I mean, Nicole did it. So, and but she didn't know.
Not that. Devastated.
But like her first thought was like, oh my God, these kids. So
but she at the mall chilling with her boyfriend, so everything's fine.
Right. She's at the mall. So what doesn't shock me though is true narcissistic fashion, the couple leaves the mall and goes back to the house.
They just want to be all in the mix.
Right.
Like y'all wanted to live together. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, like you should have been skipping town at this point. Like you should have been gone.
And I feel like she can't even act. So even if she gets there and sees it, it's not going to be like, oh my God, my mommy. Like, I feel like it's going to be really like, my mom's dead.
Right. So they acted confused and they hoped like this would throw off the cops. But, you know, this is what cops do for a living. So the police quickly took the two separately downtown to the station. Billy reportedly like stayed because they didn't have a squad car or they didn't have a means of transportation for him. They took Nicole first and he kind of like stayed and hung out. And in one article, like I read, the police never said he had to stay, but like he willingly chose to sit there on the hood is what one article said. The hood of the cop car. Just
not all relaxed
out.
Like you're in a photo shoot.
Yeah, just really, come chill on. It. Exactly. So they separated, they took them downtown, and they started interviewing them both. And both of them did end up cracking because, I mean, they're children, and they didn't clearly plan this out.
And they didn't think they were going to get caught, so they didn't have anything prepared except for that bogus alibi.
Yeah, the mall. Like, what? So they did end up cracking, and, you know, this goes to show, like, their plan to live happily ever after landed them in two separate prisons and for the rest of their lives. So you don't even get to be with Billy. So their friends and family have been, like, really hesitant to comment and talk about this because they didn't know anything about Nicole and Billy's lives. Like, that just shows, like, how excluded they really were. And so, like, they didn't have much to say when they were asked. Some did comment saying that they know Nicole was going into her junior year and that she had a boyfriend. Like, this is people that were her classmates. And I'm sorry, but I met you over 1 year ago. That's not even a long time. And I could probably list out 20 plus things right now about you. And these people went to school with her every single day.
But I think, wasn't she like, she had no friends. So like, I don't think they paid attention to her because she wasn't like the it girl. You know what I mean?
Right. But even not being the it girl, like even those quiet kids still have that one friend. Like she clearly, like, she? Right. So people also said the same thing about Billy and that all they knew about him was that he had a girlfriend that was over 100 miles away. Like this is people that said that. A neighbor that same neighbor that reported about the music also said that the whole thing was unbelievable and that it just felt like a Sunday night scary movie session, but it was like reality. The neighbor also said that Billy must have been manipulating Nicole because he watched Nicole grow up and she was a sweet, cute kid.
I mean, never that's how she wanted to be seen.
Sign of trouble. Right. Billy's classmate went on to say that he was quiet and he didn't like to talk. Not that he didn't talk. He didn't like to talk, and I quote. But that he was good at school and didn't get into any trouble. But interviews with Billy showed a totally different side because when he sat down for the interview with police before he even cracked, he told the police, I don't like cops and I have been pinned with other crimes and they never charged me. So
joke's on you, right. Billy, because you're going to jail.
Right. So this does make me think that like his narcissistic behavior while reading like what he told cops in the interview does make me think that like maybe he did verbally and manipulate Nicole, but that doesn't make her innocent. But you know, he did reportedly manipulate and verbally abuse her.
Absolutely. If they were in love like that, that puppy love, he could have been like, jump, and she would have been like, how high? Stab your mom. Exactly. How many times? But he was like, nah, exactly. I want this.
Yeah. So Nicole, after they both like admitted that they had been a part of this, they both lawyered up and they pleaded guilty. They didn't plead guilty, but they both found lawyers. And Nicole was a teenager at the time, but the judge said that she was going to be tried as adult because of the severity of the case, according to the state attorney. Exactly. And it was premeditated, which makes sense as to why she'd be tried as adult. Because definitely. Right. And the couple met online, which they both admitted in an interview, which allowed police to obtain search warrants, which allowed for them to get the computers of the home.
I'm sure that search engine was crazy.
Exactly. And I quote, the findings contained evidence of homicide and conspiracy to commit homicide. So,
kids,
this couple was researching the interweb.
Not on the web, just like how to murder my mother, how to hide evidence. Like,
literally.
No. And so, do you guys not know how to clear your history?
And on March 28th, 2005, so this murder happened in 2003, and obviously we know how the court system works and how it takes time to get a trial. But on March 28th, 2005, Nicole was found guilty to second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder.
Mother. Oh, Janine.
I know. First-degree murder. In exchange. So she kind of got time taken off in exchange for testifying against Billy, who was 20. By the time of trial, but his lawyers decided to take the, and I quote, I was insane route.
How are you gonna prove that? How?
Exactly. He was ultimately sentenced and found guilty to life in prison without parole. Like, you were not insane.
But you might be now.
So he was sentenced 40 years in prison in New Hampshire, and Nicole was sentenced to 18. Nicole was sentenced to 40 years in prison in New Hampshire because that's where she's from. So she did like serve. We're in a jail that where she was from. And Nicole was sentenced at 18 years old, and she is only going to serve 35 years or less. And let me tell you why. So they made a deal for testifying. Obviously, like, she was found guilty, and she, and 35 years is a long time.
It's not.
But she gets, and she's 18. So you do the math. 18.
You're the math teacher.
I know. I'm just telling the audience.
You know, I don't like numbers.
Exactly. You were complaining about it when you teach it. So she gets 2.5 years shaved off her sentence for every degree that she gets. So here's, so already she has had 2.5 years shaved off because she got her GED. Remember, she got charged and tried while she was still in high school. So she never got to finish her education.
Oh,
so right. So she got her GED and she got 2.5 years shaved off her sentence. Now, if she goes and completes her college degree, she gets 2.5 years shaved off her sentence.
So you're like, getting rewarded doing an education that you would have gotten outside of prison while in prison, even though you maliciously planned and executed a murder with your boyfriend.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right. And, I mean, if I was her and I knew that this was going to happen, like, you, I would have had like 5 PhDs. You could not have told me anything. I would have been a doctorate in math. I would have been a doctorate in basket weaving. I would have been a doctorate
not in basket weaving.
Travel. I mean, you tell me I could. I would have been getting those 2.5 years straight off. All of it. Ruled the world inside the prison.
Damn.
Yeah. So during sentencing, okay, so Nicole and Billy obviously were separated, and they were in different jail cells, and Nicole had some time to kind of reflect and be away from Billy. She couldn't call him. She couldn't talk to him.
Did she finally feel bad for what she did?
During the sentencing, Nicole cried as her mother's fiance wept over his love for her and her love for her daughter. Mm. Showing emotion, however, the judge told Nicole that she was just as guilty for her mother's death as Billy, even if she wasn't the one who actually did the killing.
And okay. Like, right. So now you're crying in court, boo-hoo, my mom, but you're the same girl who stepped over your dead mother to get your crappy boyfriend a washcloth to wash off your mother's blood off of her body. Cool, Nicole. Exactly. Cool story, bro.
Exactly. So that is the case in itself, but I want to pause. And I actually want to quote Nicole, and it's a kind of a lengthy little quote, but she did an interview, and we're going to link it below. And this interview is also on TikTok, but she's finally like speaking out about everything. I guess she
like
has
recently?
Like, yeah. And so she is finally talking about everything, and she did an interview. And so I'm going to like read this to you guys. I'm going to read it exactly how she said it. I've quoted her exactly. I lived with both of my parents and my younger brother until I was 11 years old, and my parents got divorced. And so my dad moved out. I think after my parents got divorced, I was dealing with that, and I became a little bit angrier. I had a little bit more resentment towards him, and it did change my perspective about myself and about life in general. School really became my self-worth, and I really identified with how, like, my grades were and how I was doing in school. I felt that it was so much part of who I was. I never got in trouble in middle school. I never got spoken to. I never had a detention. It never really crossed my mind to do anything that would be against the rules. It would have been helpful if there was more of an acknowledgement that I was doing so well. Mm. I think it also would have been helpful if there was more involvement with guidance or something, just more of like a check and see how things are going. As I got older, it was easier for me to isolate myself from people. I think at that point, I just had gotten used to being more alone as opposed to being around people. Mm. And it just became a part of who I was. Maybe I was more open. Maybe if I was more open, or maybe if I had, or maybe if I was more open, or maybe if someone had tried harder to reach out, that could have been the difference. I think that the relationship with my mom was good. It was fine. I loved my mom, and that changed when, well, not saying I stopped loving my mom, but our relationship changed. I'm not going to say that we were the most open family, because we weren't. We didn't talk about every little thing. I don't remember ever once talking about my parents' divorce with either of them. But the thing is, we didn't really talk about much of anything. When I was 14, I became involved with a 17-year-old boy. Our relationship was almost 100% over the phone, but it became everything to me. because of the amount of attention that he paid me, and I didn't really feel that I was getting that from anywhere else. I really just did whatever I could to maintain that relationship because I didn't want to lose that. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to lose him. I quickly learned how it would go if I didn't always do everything that he wanted me to do. You know, I was getting to be 15, 16 years old. I would fight more with my mom, and there was a lot more to fight about, especially with, you know, the relationship that I was having with this kid. He started talking about killing himself on the road, driving into a big truck because of me, because of his sadness over it. And I think now it just sounds silly, but it wasn't then, and it was terrifying to me. I mean, I really didn't feel like I was anything without him. I had nothing in my life at that time. That is unfortunately when the conversations started about ultimately what happened. I was 16 and he was 18 at the time. Mentally and emotionally, I don't think I was fully there. I don't think I was getting it. Our relationship was definitely emotionally abusive. He is responsible for his actions and I am responsible for mine.
Not I'm responsible for mine.
Which is what the justice system is for you to reflect and for you to take responsibility and to change.
And it seems like she has. I mean, from that statement, I mean, it sounds like she put a lot of thought into what got her to where she is. And I can definitely feel a way about, not feel a way, but I know that kids who excel and kids who do well, you don't really check on them. And I know for a fact that some of those kids get thrown under the radar and they feel this immense amount of pressure that they have to do good all the time. And if they don't, they literally shatter. I've seen it.
Right. Which, you know, this is the segment that Ashley and I wanted to stop and really talk about, because yes, we've given you the crime, but we want to break down things that we as teachers are trained to see and notice, and counselors as well. And we try our best to notice those things. But this is our disclaimer. We are human and we do oftentimes, like Ashley said, overlook certain things because we brush it off as kids are being kids.
Absolutely.
And one of the biggest things that when I was reading this and doing this story, I reflected on was the older boy part, because, you know, I have students all the time that they love confiding in me and I'm so thankful for that. But I've had not this year, but I've had a girl confide in me that her boyfriend was 18. Keep in mind, I teach 13-year-olds. Well, it compelled me to go tell the counselor, because I'm sorry. Can you not get someone your age that you have
exactly
to see?
So now you're looking for someone younger because you know they're more vulnerable and able to be persuaded, kind of like Nicole was in this whole situation. I mean, I feel like Billy probably orchestrated the whole thing and she was just like, this is my man, I'm gonna do everything for him. So I'm gonna go along with it.
Right. And that's exactly what I'm thinking. So, you know, we have school dances and stuff, and our rule at my school is that you can only bring a date that is exactly one grade level above you or one grade level below you, because that's not significant. But she was 13 when they met and he was 17 years old. You're driving around a child in your car.
That could literally be like your little sister.
Exactly. Mm. So that was the biggest red flag to me, which definitely should have been reported, because, you know, even some of those quotes from earlier, her friends did admit that they knew that she had a boyfriend. So,
but also kids, they'll know things like that and they won't want to disclose it because they don't want to be the quote unquote snitch. I'm not going to be the one to ruin this relationship, blah, 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 because it's not my business. But at the end of the day, I would prefer if you said everything that you thought was wrong rather than suppressing it, because you don't know. That can really change somebody. That can really help somebody, essentially. We could have avoided this whole situation.
I agree. I agree 100%. And, you know, one of the other red flags, when I was discussing this case with my boyfriend, he was just like, oh, it's the quiet kid. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Yes, the quiet kids get those stereotypes, and I do not want to do that to the quiet kids.
No, not at all.
Yes, they do fall under the radar because they are quiet. But for example, I do have a very quiet girl, and I all year have been trying to get her to branch out and speak to me and interact with me and blah, blah, blah. But her parents emailed me directly to check in on her because they know that she is quiet.
That's
so
sweet.
They are, yeah, so sweet.
We love a proactive parent.
Oh my gosh. Yes, we do. And it's not like I'm not blaming Janine at all. We are pro victim here, and Janine was the victim. But you know, like if your child is quiet, not saying your child is going to end up doing something heinous like this, but you know, reach out to the teachers and be like, hey, I know Tommy's quiet, but like, how are they doing? What have you noticed?
Yes.
Keeping just little absolutely things like that.
The twins are just five. And I remember when they started preschool last year, I was worried because Skylar and Aria are two different entities. Skylar's like out rambunctious. She'll talk to anybody, but Aria is the complete opposite. She is the complete opposite. She does not do those things. She's quiet. So I was always messaging her teachers like, how is she doing? Is she making friends? Da, da, da. And this is when she was four. This is when she was three, four, right? So I'm at that age, I'm already proactively doing this for my child. Granted, Janine had, like, she's not at fault here. She's not.
No.
But I just know for myself that I knew that my child is quiet. So I was constantly reaching out to the teacher. So I can completely attest to that because I did it.
Right. And, you know, it's not always the quiet ones, but they do. I think the quiet students do know that they kind of fall to the back in nature, because obviously when I walk into my classroom and I don't know that I'm not going to give her name, but like I have a student and she is like in your face, like, hey, Miss Dozier. Oh, my gosh. How's your day? Blah, blah, blah.
So she is like, me.
Yeah. And so and I see quiet kid behind her and he's not gonna say anything, but I try to acknowledge him. And what I really try to do is like when they turn something in, I try to say their name out loud. I'm like, thank you, Billy. Thank you, Tommy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Janet. Like
yes.
I try to make them know, like, I know you, I see you, I see your hard work. I'm acknowledging it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And another thing that like really spoke to me, well, actually spoke volumes to me, is like in her interview, she openly says, if someone had just asked me, then all of this could have been different.
Yeah.
And granted, this is in 2003. And, you know, we had bell ringers, but we still used like overhead projections back in that day. Like, we used,
with the little markers.
So you were still pulling out your highlighter in this day and age. But, and I feel like it is different now. Like I know for me during the pandemic and even still now, and I know for you too, because you've talked about it, but like on our bell ringers weekly, I do something so not even math related and just kind of like check in with them. I'm like, how you feeling today? Like write about your feelings, write about how you feel about Valentine's Day. That was theirs this week. Like, what are your thoughts? Like, how do you feel about the
upcoming holiday? It's so sweet. I feel like back in the, I don't want to, it sounds bad saying back in the day, but it was back in the day. You know, mental health was not in the forefront. It was more of just like, kind of like, oh, you're going through something, get over it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that was what it was back then. And now because of everything, it's just like, no, mental health matters. You need to take care of yourself. You need to, and yeah. I feel like, especially as teachers going into 2 years in a pandemic, it's important for all children to be acknowledged and for them to know that their feelings are okay, because this is, these are hard times. This is not a time.
It's been so much easier for her. Like if she did feel like she was being manipulated, like she now in this day and age would feel more, I hope she would feel more open to go and like talk to someone. But in 2003, like people were just struggling internally. Like I remember my junior year, 2009 or 2008, I was diagnosed with anxiety and depression. And it was like, it stemmed from me having like major stomach issues. And I literally in high school.
Oh my gosh. Like I remember you telling me this.
Yeah. I couldn't digest food because my, and I remember when the doctor told me that and I didn't tell anyone. I was
why?
Like, because I was so scared. Like people were going to judge me. It wasn't like a thing then. Like
true.
Didn't talk about it. But now like I can speak for my school, like we have a referral sheet and like it is a Google form and it is actively open at all times. And a teacher, if we even notice anything, like I could be like, Tommy was very quiet today and that's very out of character. Can you pull him? And like our counselors will make it completely anonymous and they'll just do like I guess like their version of like what the police do for like a wellness check. They'll just be like, hey, what's up? How are you? You good? And they do it so well. Like they play it off just like, hey, you want a piece of gum? Like, you good? You all right? How's your day?
Yeah, they
How's
don't you- make it like, hey, your teacher hit me up. What's going on? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I just had to do a couple. That's this week. I had to do one this week I had to. We were doing an activity about what we notice and wonder, and it was we're learning about Peter Pan. So the picture was one of the, I don't know if it's one of the Lost Boys, one of the boys was climbing up the side of the ship, and there were four boys on the ship. So I was like, all right, what do you notice? What do you see? And one of my students was like, oh, it looks like the boy is trying to commit suicide. And we're just like,
What?
first of all, he's in third grade. And we're like,
What?
what? What do you mean? And like the picture in no way, shape, or form looked like that. You know what I'm saying? In no way, shape, or form. And we were, and I immediately was like,
Nope.
mm-mm.
Divert, divert,
And I went
divert.
right to the email and I was like, clickety clack, cows that moo. Okay.
Right. Yeah, and like so exactly. And they can do it so anonymously these days. So like I get that it was a different time period. And like that's one thing James, my boyfriend, was like harping on. He was like, when you talk about these cases, really identify with the time period of what was going on, because it's so easy just to compare it to what we live in now. And you're like, well, that shouldn't have happened because we have XYZ. Well, no, we didn't. But our whole goal here is to help prevent these things in the future, because teachers are with these kids all day long. We should be noticing things at all times. And one thing I really want to bring up is, and this happened in my life, and I am honestly forever grateful for it, but I don't actually hear enough of it. She went through a divorce at 11 years old. Okay. I was in seventh grade when my parents sat me and my sister down and said, we're getting a divorce. Seventh grade. And I went to school the next day after hearing that news. And I'm going to go back to my BFF, Rachel, because she was there for me from day one. Like we were just biffles. She was like the only person that knew. And I got called out of class in the middle of class and I had to go to the counselors. And all she did was like, hey, your mom called and let me know what was going on. And I just want to like see how you're feeling. And like, if you want to talk about anything. And obviously, this was back in. What two, this was 2003, so I was like in seventh grade, and it meant a lot because I obviously didn't want to talk to my mother about this situation. I didn't want to talk to
Definitely.
my father about
Because you
this
don't want them to feel
situation.
any type of way about their decisions, you know?
Right, she opened a door for me that allowed me to talk to someone anonymously, and that was like my first gate into therapy, which I totally support therapy.
Hashtag
But
therapy
it
all
also,
day.
but it also gets me to this point is like. I'm not saying that you should involve the school in your home life business like 24/7. We shouldn't know the ins and outs of your life, but we do have trained professionals on site. And
Absolutely.
most schools at this day and age have two active counselors on duty and a social worker on duty. I know that we do. And
I think we only have
if
one.
you, I just feel like as an 11-year-old, like I went through it, that meant a lot to me. And like it was one quick call and it was one quick visit, but it opened that door like I'm not alone. Someone's here and it's not my parents and I feel great about that. So like what I think would be so helpful is like having divorce counseling for kids that are going through a divorce at a young age.
Absolutely. I mean, my kids, me and the girl's dad, we divorced when they were two, three. My memory's horrible. Well, I just shut things out. It's something I'm working on. they divorced, and I was
Compartmentally.
worried, and I was terrified because I'm like, okay, my kids are used to having two parents, and now they're going to have. Well, granted, they're still having two parents, but we're in separate households now. So now they have to learn, you know, the ins and out at mommy's house and the ins and outs at daddy's house. And I was just really worried. And even at a young age, granted, they were so young that they're not really going to remember me and him together, which I'm very thankful for. Like they know, oh, we're going to mommy's house, we're going to daddy's house. But also, I did see regression in them. We did see regression when we split up, and I felt horrible about it because it's just like that was something that was out of my control, and I did everything in my power to make everything seem like it was okay for them. You know what I mean? Because I didn't want any changes for them, and it still ended up happening. There were behaviors at daycare, and I was just like, oh my gosh, like what is going on?
And that's like so crucial. And I mean, it's worth noting at any age, but that middle school age, 11, 12, and 13, where they've already had a significant amount of time with both parents,
Absolutely. Like
is
you remember your
crucial.
parents together, and now you're just like, dang, I remember those times where they were together. And then when the times aren't good, when they're separated, it's just like, I want to be back to where it was.
Right. I mean, I agree. And I do think this is something that the public school system should put into place. And again, I'm not saying that parents should call up and be like, me and Billy decided to get a divorce. Like, he cheated on me. We're not saying that, but like,
you hey, need to be all in my business like that.
Right. Like, can you check on my child today? Something's happening at home. Just do like a wellness check. Like, we want to be a part of that. And
yes, you know, hashtag be a proactive parent, please. It makes our job so much easier.
And again, we're not saying Janine wasn't. And we are just saying that some things within the school system could have possibly made this tragedy not a tragedy.
Absolutely.
At all. Like, it could have changed the narrative. And another thing that I noticed, and I kind of just experienced this recently, which I've experienced in my years of teaching, is like that harp that she had on herself about being perfect. And I say that because, yes, I have two students right now that are going to make 100 every 9 weeks. Like, that's just what they're going to do.
Yeah.
But it's just because of their natural ability. Now, I have those kids that are not going to make 100 every 9 weeks, but will strive for perfection to no end. And I recently had a student that, which again, we're all adapting to this new like tech age of teaching where we Chromebooks. And I have done like a really quick like study within my own students that they test better on paper old school than they do on a Chromebook.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And so we were testing on the Chromebook because I was trying to get something that could be quick graded. And this student who strives for perfection, they made a 70, which in most students' eyes is like, dang, yeah, I made a 70. Heck yeah, go me.
Yeah, but when you're an overachiever, it's not good enough. Right. It's practically a failure.
Exactly. And I was sitting in the front of the class and he immediately put his head down and he started like weeping. And
oh, the baby.
It broke my heart. It broke my heart. So without even like letting him know that I was watching and that I saw it, because he was doing it very discreetly, but I emailed his mother and I was like, hey, so-and-so, you know, made a 70 on the test. I do not think that it was lack of him knowing it. I just want you to know, because I know that he is extremely upset right now on himself.
Yes.
And he is to blame himself all day, but I need you to know that this is not a reflection of who he is. He has bonus point opportunities. And I by no means think that he is going to fail my class. Like, he's going to come back from this. And I need you to know that. And I immediately sent that. And I turned around and I emailed him that he could see that email at any point of the day that he decided to check his email. I was like, in all caps, you got this. Do not let this be.
Oh,
your
that's
defining.
So sweet. That is absolutely so sweet. Because people, I feel like kids need that. They need someone. And I've noticed in third grade too, like some of these kids are so hard on themselves. My kids are in third grade. Like, yeah. Why are you being so hard on yourself in third grade? I have to tell them all the time, if you, like, we are all human. We make mistakes. If you were perfect and if you knew all the things I'm teaching you, you wouldn't be in this grade. You wouldn't be here. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We all have issues. We all got things going on. But all I ask is that you try your best. If that was the best you could do, kudos to you.
Yep, same. Same. And like, that's just some things that like I noticed and in her interview really stood out to me, because obviously like our goal here is that these tragedies have already happened and they can't be undone, but maybe we can shine light on signs.
Absolutely.
Shine light on actions that students and teens and even young adults, because again, we're going to stick with that 25-year-old brain that being fully developed, even though I'm almost 30 and I don't think mine's even developed yet, because
I'm 32 and where's the development? Don't date.
Exactly.
Okay.
Still making questionable decisions every day.
Every day of my life.
Every single day. Like, yeah. I mean, so that's like our whole goal. And like, this is what our podcast is going to be about, is we want to bring light to certain like behaviors that these criminals, because I'm going to call them criminals because their actions were criminal. Like,
yes, they
are wrong, and we are not trying to change the narrative. They are wrong and they are
absolutely
wrong for what they did. And we are going to be pro victim here, but we also really want to help adults, even if you're not in the education system, learn how you can utilize your child's teachers and counselors and social workers and admin and
yes,
cafeteria staff and all these things. Like, my grandmother was a cafeteria lady, and we cannot go to freaking Walmart without people being like, hey, Miss Kelly. Oh my gosh. Hey, Miss Kelly, do you remember me?
And I feel like they know everybody in the school. I feel like cafeteria workers and bus drivers know all the tea. Right. They know it
and
all.
They, not, I mean, I am biased, but my grandmother is a saint. But literally, like, I have been with her and, like, firsthand been like, did you know who that was? And she was like, no. And they'll be like, you gave me $5 one day when I had nothing, or you bought my lunch, or you gave me a free piece of pizza, or you let me fill up my sweet tea. Like, just things like that. I'm like, gosh, this person speaking to us right now is like 50 years old. And like, they remember that, you know,
like that is so memorable. I strive for that.
I do too. I mean, I hope every teacher in the system is like striving for those moments, but I mean, it is teacher burnout right now in the nation, and I get that, but like, we are still out here doing our very, very best.
And we are very, very exhausted.
Yes. So, Ashley, that was my case for you. And those are the signs from Murder 101, like what to look for this particular case, like the signs that Nicole displayed and like how we can change that and notice all of
that. Yeah. I just think it was just so crazy how she was literally just like, I don't want to, like, I guess an honor student. Like, she was those kids that you don't worry about, but you got to worry about everyone. You have to.
Yep.
The kids that outburst, the kids that sit in the back, you have to worry about every single one of them.
You do. You do. And I tell my kids that all the time. I'm like, you better be careful picking on that person. Like, you don't know. Like, you don't know what they're going through. And at the same time, you know, we give so much attention to those bad kids. Like, I had a kid today, like, I was doing my yearbook photos, and he won, like, most likely to, like, make the teacher laugh. And yet he spends half of his days in ISS. But he is hilarious. Everyone
those kids are those ISS kids are always the funniest. They are
the funniest kids. Like, what did he say the other day? Oh, he goes, he was talking to somebody and he was like, you ain't gonna do shit. And I was like, hey, I was like, language. And he was like, oh, Midoja, you know I got a potty mouth. And I was like, I can't even. Like, I know. I was like, but hey, let's really try to reel that in. Like,
let's find another word to replace. Yeah. Maybe shiitake.
And so now he like walks by me. He goes, I ain't cussed today, Miss Dozier.
And I was look at that impact you made on him. Look at him. I can't wait for him to see you in the grocery store at 50. Like, Miss Dozier, I'm still not cursing. Oh, God, it'll break my. Oh, my heart is happy. Yeah. Stop it.
I've changed my words to dang and crap and shoot.
Oh, yes, man. Them synonyms.
But like, it's those kids that we're often like, oh, they're not going to be anything. They're not going to. And I'm not saying we do that, but that is the ones that kind of get labeled as that. But then it's
like, and that sucks because every year a kid needs a fresh start. You can change so much over a summer. You can change so much over a summer. You can.
I know. So that's our podcast. I cannot believe we've recorded one episode and like we're making
this we did
happen.
It. We did it.
And obviously their episodes are going to get better. We are learning. And if you have advice, if you have tips, if we're not being detailed enough, if we're talking too much, if we're rambling, let us know. We want to perfect.
Tell us everything. We need to know the tea.
All the tea. All the tea. About all ourselves. The tea. Tell us about ourselves.
All the loaded tea. We need to know all the loaded tea. Let's go.
Ashley, I think they're headed out the door.
Oh, well, the bell. Don't dismiss you. I do.
Nah, we just kidding. Get out of here.
All right. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.